In the morning.
Today's daf in Baba Kama's Mem Aleph. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. As long as Zechan Nishmas Lipa Gabriela Bashmua. We are today starting on Mem Amud Aleph at the two dots towards the bottom of the Amud. We yesterday saw a quick discussion that takes place between Rava, Rav Nachman, and an introduction to Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Rav Acha bar Yaakov asked a couple of questions that were, if you will, brain teasers, but not brain teasers, they have to do with Torah, but difficult questions to answer. What if you have animals owned by partners? Is there a payment of kofar? So that was one question that he asked. Second question that he asked is that when someone's obligated to pay kofar, it is a kapara, it serves as an atonement. Does the gizbar come in and start taking a mashkon for the purposes of the kofar payment? Okay, we're at the bottom of the Amud, the very bottom of the Amud, on Mem Amud Alf Tan Rabbanan. Okay, so a couple of halachas that are dealt with in this braisa, and that's the following. Person borrows an animal, assuming that the animal was a tom. Okay, the owner of the animal did not disclose the information, and so therefore when the borrower borrowed the animal, so he safely assumed that the animal has no history, has no track record. Right, it's not even a rental. It's just a simple borrowing. But in other words, the owner didn't tell him anything, so he just figured the animal was a tom. And v'nimsamua. But it turns out, however, that that's not true. And what he borrowed really was a wild and crazy animal. And now the animal does damage while in the hands of the shoal. Now the shoal has a responsibility to be shomer. The shoal has a responsibility to watch the animal, and the shoal is going to be liable for any damages that's done by the animal. So the so what is going to be the amount of liability? So meshamim. So I'm sorry. The bala meshamim chatzin nezek v'shoal meshamim chatzin nezek. So here says the brisa, there is going to be a split decision in terms of the payment of liability. Meaning the animal is a muad, so therefore how much you have to pay as a muad? You have to pay full nezek. The animal is a muad, you have to pay full nezek. The only outstanding issue over here is that when the borrower borrowed it, he didn't know the animal was a muad. He thought the animal was a tom. So what he was ready to take on was the responsibility of having to pay chatzi nezek, only half damages. The fact that now he discovers the animal's a muad, and now that they're full damages, so he'll turn back to the owner and basically effectively say to him, hey, you didn't tell me it was a muad. I didn't know that I was going to have to pay nezek shalem. So the brisa says, fine. So the borrower is going to have to pay only half damages, because that's all he thought he was going to have to pay, and the original owner is going to have to pay the other half of the damages. Now, who would be Shoal? V'yichziru labalim. Let's now go with the second scenario. In the second scenario, borrow the animal. Now, while under the care of the animal was a tom. While under the care of the Shoal, while under the care of the borrower, the animal goes and inflicts damage once, twice, a third time. And now, while under the care of the Shoal, the animal is a muad. What's the halacha? Balam misham chatzi nezek. And then, sorry, before we get to the halacha, and then the animal was returned back to its original owner. So balam misham chatzi nezek v'shoal patur miklum. So when the animal gets returned back to the original owner, that's a reset button. Why is that a reset button? Because any time that you have an animal change ownership, so we discussed this earlier, this is mishan v'shoos. Once you change ownership, so that hits the reset button. So when it goes from the bar back to the owner, so now any damages happening from that point going forward are tom damages when you only pay chatzin as a payment. Okay. Adkan, that is the end of the brisa. We can observe right now, although the Gemara is going to discuss it later, but we'll just make the observation right now that there seems to be a basic inconsistency in the brisa, meaning that in the first half of the brisa, when the animal is going from the owner to the borrower, and the animal historically is a muad, the animal continues to be a muad, even in the hands of the borrower, even though it changed rishus. And meanwhile, when it goes from the borrower back to the owner, so even though the animal was a muad in the hands of the borrower and it goes back to the owner, so we hit the reset button, because new owner, new ownership. So how come in the first case the change of hands does not reset the button, does not hit the reset button. And meanwhile, in the second case, changing of hands does change the reset button. Okay, so we're making the observation now. That's an obvious inconsistency in the Braisa. And later, we're going to try to address that. In the meantime, however, the Gemara is just going to focus on the first case in the Braisa. So the first case of the Braisa was that the animal was a muad. The owner did not disclose that information, handed it over to the borrower. The animal did damage while the borrower was responsible watching it. And now the borrower is going to have to pay half damages because he thought it was a tom. And the owner is going to have to pay the other half. That's the first case in the Braisa. And the Gemara is going to ask numerous questions. Amar, shalom b'cheskas tam nimsa muad ba'al misham chatzinezek v'sho chatzinezek ve'amai. So the Gemara basically is going to go through a series of arguments between the owner and the borrower. Basically, we're going to manufacture a dialogue between the two, but through the purpose of this dialogue right now is basically to try to see if anyone has a more reasonable argument than the other in terms of why you should be paying all of it, I should be paying none of it, this is ridiculous. Like, what's going on over here? So here we go with a dialogue that could exist between the borrower and the owner. So first of all, the borrower says to the owner, like, I don't understand. I look to borrow an animal. And meanwhile, what did you lend me? You lent me a lion. Okay, now, obviously it's not a lion. Obviously it's an ox. But the point being is that there's a fundamental difference between a tom and a muad. A tom is a pleasant domicile animal. A muad is an animal that has gored in the past and has a propensity now to gore. So basically, the bar says to the lender, like, I don't understand why I should be liable at all. This is not what I asked to borrow. I asked to borrow a tom, and look what you gave me. So I'm Rav Hachabai, my skin shaker, Boshuhu, Nakhan. So the Gemara says, well, we're talking about it. In other words, basically the Gemara is saying, that's a good argument. That's actually a very good argument. So what we're going to have to say, just to understand the Braisa, is that this case in the Braisa is a specific case. Specifically, we're talking about where the borrower knew that the animal gored. Now, the borrower didn't know that the animal gored three times, so he didn't know that the animal was actually upgraded from a tom to a muad. Upgraded, downgraded, you can go either way with the terminology, but he didn't know that the animal was a muad, but he did know that the animal had some propensity to gore other animals. So therefore, he loses that argument. So the Gemara says, okay, but still, can you make the argument that I thought I was borrowing a tam, not a muad? So mishum damle, so sofi tam hava paga niska by shlume. Hashtanami zo shlim paga niska. So the Gemara says, okay, he's right, but the owner is going to say to the borrower, I'm with you. I know you thought you borrowed a tam, but even under your premise that you borrowed a tam, you're going to have to pay chatzin ezek. So here, that's exactly the halacha. Halacha is you're paying chatzin ezek. So there's no change between your premise and what the result is. Fine. We'll get to that. Okay, that excellent point. We're going to get to that. V'neim alei itam hava mishal megufo. In fact, when I say we get to it, I mean right now. V'neim alei itam hava mishal megufo. So the borrower says to the owner, okay, but under my premise, the animal was a tom, which means that the payment is coming out of the goof. Now you're extracting the half payment out of me. So the shul says to the owner, I still think I shouldn't have to pay at all. So the Gemara says, Misham Damalei Sof Sof At Lav Tura Bai Shlomei Lididi. So the owner says to the bar, okay, but remember, yes, you're right, the half payment is going to come from the animal itself. But in the event that you don't have the animal, so you're still going to be on the hook to pay for the half payment, meaning that the first recourse is going to be coming from the animal. But in the event that the animal is unavailable, so then you yourself are going to have to pay that half payment. So basically, the owner says to the borrower, okay, so once again, you're stuck. V'neim alei, we're now on the top of Mem Amud Beis. V'neim alei im tam hava modina umiftarina. Now, the borrower says to the owner, okay, but let's say the animal was a tom. And again, I borrowed it under the premise that it was a tom. And let's say it was a tom. So now we know that there's a chatzin ezek payment by a tom. We also know that it was a debate earlier in the Gemara whether this Chatzi Nezik falls into the category of Knas or whether it falls into the category of Mammon. Now, the conclusion of the Gemara earlier is that it's a Knas and it's not Mammon. Now, we also know that when it comes to Knas, Mod Dibbe Knas Pater, that if you'd make an admission about owing Knas, so then you don't have to pay it. The only time that you pay the Knas is when Beis Din finds you guilty. After Beis Din finds you guilty, an admission obviously is not going to help you. But if you make the admission first, so then you're not going to have to pay. So the Shoal is now saying to the owner, had this animal actually been a Tom, so then what I would have done is that I would have admitted to the damages before taking the Beis Din, and then I would have been exempt. Now, even if you're going to take the position that the Chatzi Nezik payment of a Tam is not Knas, but rather it's Mamon, name Alei, Itam, who have a Marikne La Agma, what I then would have done is I would have taken the animal and I would have hidden the animal in a swamp. Basically, I would have done something so that the Nizak, the damaged party, would never be able to get to the animal, and so therefore we can hide it. Now, in this dialogue that's existing, this manufacturer dialogue that we have now between the buyer and the owner, so basically, obviously, what the Gemara is trying to do is produce bona fide, legitimate arguments that one can make to the other. This most recent argument the Gemara just provided, where the buyer says to the owner, well, you know, if the animal was a tam, and even if you take the position of Chatzi Nezek is Mammon and not Knas, well, at least we could have hidden the animal. This last argument is really hard to understand and entertain, considering the fact that this dialogue is presumably supposed to give legitimate arguments. This is not a legitimate argument. This is an illegitimate argument. You're not allowed. If you have a financial obligation, you can't say, yeah, but I would have sheltered the money. That's weird. That's strange. And the Tosfos, second Tosfos on the Amud, notes that this last argument of the Gemara is, in fact, obviously a strange argument. It's a weird taina. See the second Tosfos, who makes an attempt to try to explain how this basically got into the Gemara. Okay, back to the Gemara. So the Gemara says, fine. The reason why the bar can't even make that argument is because damage was the bar barred the animal, the damage was done, and then Beis Din took the animal in satisfaction of the obligation. So the Gemara says, okay. So the Gemara says, now the owner has some tainas, because what's the owner now going to say? Why in the world am I paying Chatzi Nezek? So can the owner say to the borrower, now wait one second, not only did you not properly guard the animal, not only did the animal, while you were borrowing it, do damage, but on top of that, Beis Din took it away from you, and now I can't take it up with Beis Din. They're Beis Din. So you basically put me in a position where I lost, and I don't even have a fighting chance. So the Gemara says, okay, but Mishum Damar Lay. Yeah, but the Gemara says, but okay, that's fine. But the bar is going to say to the owner, E hadrina ni alach lav minacha v'shak lelay. So the bar says to the owner, let's say Beis Din didn't take it. Let's say that the animal was still available. Let's say you took back the animal. Okay, but the nezik was done. The obligation is owed. And Beis Din is going to go after you. So really, that's not much of a tie, that's not much of an argument. You're going to lose anyway. So the Gemara says, V'neim alei yadrit ni alei, hava mirikne la agma. So the Gemara says, again, the very unusual argument that the owner is now saying to the borrower, if I would have got my animal back, had you not let Beis Din take it, so then what I would have done is I would have sheltered the animal. I would have put the animal away, tucked the animal away, hid the animal in a place where Beis Din couldn't have gotten it. Now again, I'm going to repeat myself. It's unusual that we're providing arguments back and forth. And again, it's an illegitimate argument, meaning I'm going to shelter the animal from Beis Din. You're not allowed to if you owe the money. So then this is obviously This is attuned to geneva, gezela. You're taking money away from somebody that doesn't belong to you. Okay, anyway. So, mishum damalei, sof, lav mi aliyah hava mishtame. So the Gemara says, okay, what difference does it make whether you hide the animal or you don't hide the animal? The animal was a muad. We know the basic halacha, that when your muad animal does damage, you pay min aliyah, you pay out of pocket. You must pay out of pocket, regardless of whether the animal's here, the animal's not here. So it wouldn't have made a difference. So the Gemara is just pushing the envelope over here to basically get to the point where the Gemara really wants to get to. Maybe we're talking about a circumstance where the owner has no other assets whatsoever. And the only asset he had was that animal. And so his argument to the borrower is, had the animal not been taken away from you, had the animal been returned to me, I would have hidden the animal. And because I have no other assets, so therefore I would have, quote unquote, gotten away with it. So the Gemara says, Mishum da'amar lekihech de mishtabana lididcha, hachanami mishtabana lahaich. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you have a shibud, meaning you have an obligation. Your animal did damage, and you have an obligation, and it's as if you're paid already. So the Gemara, and I suspect that really what the Gemara wanted to do was get to this point, and even though the Gemara made some arguments which are questionable along the way, but basically the Gemara wants to get to this point, and that is the following. This is what we call Pruta de Rabbi Nassan. And the idea behind Pruta de Rabbi Nassan is as follows. A owes B money. B owes C money. So C can bypass B, go directly to A, and get the money from A. And this is what's called Pruta de Rabbi Nassan. And even though there's no formal kinyan that's done, but nevertheless, C can go directly to A. And we know this based on the pasuk. The pasuk says, V'nasan la'asher asham lo. The Torah is describing a scenario in which a person steals money from somebody. And he has obviously an obligation to pay back the person he stole from. But meanwhile, the person that he stole from also has an outstanding obligation that he owes another person money. So basically now, the person who is owed can go past the nigzal, the victim of the theft, go to the gozel, the one who stole the money, and say, look, you owe back the nigzal, but meanwhile the nigzal owes me, so you can pay me the money directly. Here too, in a situation in which the shoal owes the person that was victimized, the nizak, and the mazik owes the shoal, because the mazik didn't tell the shoal that the animal was a muad. The mazik has left the shoal with the assumption the animal's a tam. So, the mazik owes the shoal. The shoal owes an nizak. So again, C can now bypass B, go directly to A, and so take the money directly away from A. So that's why, under all circumstances, the second chatzi nezik is going to be coming from the owner to the victim. Okay. The Gemara continues now. We are on Mem Amud Beis, halfway down on the Amud. And now the Gemara is going to deal with the discrepancy that we raised earlier. There were two cases that were dealt with in the Braisa. Case number one is the animal was a muad, handed over to the borrower, non-disclosure. The borrower did not know that the animal was a muad. The animal he thought the animal was a tom, did damage. You have to pay full damages. Nezek Shalom. Then the second case in the Braisa is where the animal was a muad under the care of the shoel. Then the animal was handed back to the owner. Reset button. The animal now becomes a tam. And the Gemara deals with the basic discrepancy. Seifa Rishus Mishana, Resha Rishus Eina Mishana. And Gemara asked the question succinctly. I don't understand. When we went from the owner to the borrower, so that was not hitting a reset button, even though new person in charge. And meanwhile, on the converse, when the animal went from the borrower to the owner, so the animal reverts to being a tam. Why should that be? So the Gemara is going to give three answers to this question. Number one, I'm Rav Yochanan Tavra. So Rav Yochanan says, take the brisa, and the word Tavra in Aramaic means shover, break the brisa in half. Meaning, you're absolutely right. Misha Shanazu, Lo Shanazu. Whoever learned the first half of the brisa did not learn to teach the second half of the brisa. There is no way to resolve the discrepancy. The first and a half, second half of the brisas are operating with two different assumptions. Answer number two. Rabbi Amar Midereisha Rishos and Mishana Sefanami Rishos and Mishana. Rava says of the opinion that really, truth be told, is that there's both the beginning and the end of the brisa subscribe to the idea that there is no reset button when it changes hands. The Seifa Hainu Taima. Now, if that's true, so then how do you understand the second half of the brisa? Because when it goes from the borrower back to the owner, it hits the reset button. And how can that be? If both sides of the brisa are subscribing to the viewpoint that a change of hands does not hit the reset button. Because effectively, the owner is saying to the borrower, you do not have that kind of power where you could take my animal and change its status. Meaning, while the animal's under your care and under your watch, you're going to be responsible and you're going to be liable. And I gave you the animals at Tom. Now, while it's under your care, so and the animal goes from being a Tom to a Muad, you're going to be Chayv Nezek Shalem. But when the animal comes back to me, the animal's going to be a Tom. And I know, generally speaking, we say that a change of hands does not hit the reset button. But you don't have the power to take my animal and change the status of my animal. That is the argument that the owner could say to the borrower. That's the second answer. A third answer of the Gemara, Rav Papa Amar Midesefer Rishos Mishana, Rishonami Rishos Mishana. Rav Papa's of the opinion that really a change of hands is always going to hit the reset button. Now, that makes then the Sefer works out perfectly. When the animal goes from the Shoah back to the original owner, animal reverts back to a Tom. How come that's not true when it goes to the borrower? Vereisha Hainu Taima Mishum De Kol Makom Shaholech Sham. Sorry, Shaholech Shem Ba'alav Alav. Answers the Gemara, because when an animal goes from an owner to a borrower, the borrower is not considered a change of hands. It's not considered a new rishus. The borrower is only having the rights to the animal, but is not considered a new entity, a new owner of the animal. So therefore, when the animal was a muad in the hands of the owner, does not change when it goes to the borrower. Borrower only had the rights to the animal. The ownership is still attached to the owner. That's why the animal remains a muad. That's Rav Papa's answer. The advantage of Rav Papa's answer is that it conforms with the halacha, meaning the halacha is rishus mishana. That when an animal changes from one hand to another hand, you're hitting the reset button, the animal reverts back to a tam. That is the halacha. And so Rav Papa understands the brisa in the context of the accepted halacha. Shor yitzdai d'meinu chayiv misa. Okay. A week after the...
The owner can say, I gave you a
tam.
You gotta give me back to the same.
Right. Well, that was the second answer. That was effectively the second answer of the Gemara. Right. But the third answer is Rav Papa's answer. Okay. If he gave it as a muad, no, it's gonna come back as a muad. Meaning because there never changed ownership. The only thing the borrower had was simply rights to it. Okay, a week after the running of the bulls in Pamplona, so my crack research team last night helped me. I don't want to say this with amusement. I think two people died. I'm always sympathetic when people die, but I don't understand why people do it. It's one of the strangest things that exists on this planet. But anyway, but basically these oxen were not goring because they did so on their own, but basically they were told to do so. So in a confluence of events, so we're learning now, Baba Kama Daf Mem Amud Beis, and really this goes back to the Mishnah that we learned on Shabbos, and that is the Shor HaEtzdadyan, the stadium shore, where basically it's a bullfight. The animal, the ox, was trained to gore people. So we know the halacha is, the Torah says that if an ox kills a person, the ox is put to death. What we're learning now is that in the event, and we learned this back in the Mishnah, that the ox did not kill on its own, but rather was trained to do so, the ox is not going to be put to death. We in the Mishnah that we learned together over Shabbos, it's based on the drasha. The Torah says, "Ki yigach shor, when an ox gores, shall velo sheyagichu, but not if it's prompted to gore somebody to death." That is what we learned together back in the Mishnah. The Gemara now has the following discussion. We are on Mem Amud Beis. We're at the two dots, two thirds of the way down on the Amud. Shor Yitzadian Enu Chayv Misa Ibay Luhu Malagabe Mizbeach. Okay. We know that the ox is going to get a pass on being put to death. It's not going to be put to death. Can we bring it as a carbon? Interesting. Now, what is the question of can we bring it as a carbon? So the perhaps the argument would go that generally speaking, we know that there are a number of different types of animals that are unfit to be brought on the Mizbeach. Even though we're allowed to benefit from the animal, can check the animal, can eat the animal, but for a term that, if you know Yiddish, which I don't, you'll understand, pasnished. It's just simply inappropriate for certain animals to be put on the Mizbeach. So this animal over here, yes, was a murderer, but no, didn't do so on its own, and so it's not going to be put to death. Is it still going to be eligible to be brought up onto the Mizbeach?
It's still a mu'ad, right?
Okay. Yeah. Let's. For the capital punishment, for the capital crime, the animal will be put to death after the first time that it kills. So it doesn't have to. It doesn't have to be a muad. Okay. Now, ibaylohu maulagabe mizbech Rav Amar kasher Shmuel Amar pasul machlokus Rav and Shmuel. Rav takes the more lenient position that yes, you can be brought on the mizbech. Rav Amar kasher anusu. Rav's argument is such a wonderfully simple argument, and that is that the animal killed, but beyond its control. It was trained to do so. It was prompted to do so, and so this is a classic case of ones, and ones rachmana patre. Now, it is a very interesting extension of the halacha, because we generally talk about ones in the context of you and I, meaning we speak about ones by people. We don't generally speak of ones as it relates to animals. Rav is extending the principle of ones to animals. Shmuel Amar Pasul Hare Neva Bo Avera, and Shmuel's of the opinion that look, I know it was done. I know the avera was done beyond its control, but it did an avera. It's not fit to be brought on the mizbech. Meitzvah the Gemara challenges now based on a brisa. Mina Beim Lotzias Anirva the Es Ha. I'm sorry. Es harove ves anirva min habakar lo tzi es hanevad min hatzon lo tzi es hamuktza. So the brisa teaches us that certain animals are not fit to be brought in the mizbeach. Let's take the brisa step by step. Number one, the brisa says if an animal is involved in bestiality on both sides, meaning whether it was the male participant or the female participant, it doesn't matter. If an animal is involved in bestiality, the animal is not fit for the mizbeach. Point number one. Point number two is that if an animal was served as avodah zarah, the animal cannot be offered on the mizbeach. Right? Someone bowed down to the animal, treated like a god, cannot be brought as a carbon on the mizbeach. Three, muktzah. Muktzah, as Rashi explains over here, is that it was set aside. Rashi writes, "Sheyachdu la'akriv la'avodah zarah." It was set aside so that it will be an offering to avodah zarah, so it is not going to. It is no longer fit to be brought on the mizbeach. And finally, minatzon lo tziyason ogeach. And the last point is that minatzon is teaching us that if the animal gored somebody to death, it is not fit to be brought on the mizbeach. Four different exclusions of animals that just were involved in unseemly activity. The big three, by the way, right? Shvichas damim, gilu erayos, and avodah zarah. So it was involved in unseemly activity, and so therefore cannot be brought on the mizbeach. Now, Amar Rabbi Shimon, im ne'amar. This is still continuation of the brisa, and it's this point of Rabbi Shimon that we're going to really be focusing on. Amar Rabbi Shimon, im ne'amar roveya, lama ne'amar nogeach, im ne'amar nogeach, lama ne'amar roveya. Now, why do both of these points need to be made? Because these are points that cannot be extrapolated one from the other. Roveya asaba onis karotzon. Because when it comes to a sexual crime where the animal was involved in bestiality, so there it's not going to make a difference whether it was a willing participant or an unwilling participant. The animal will be disqualified for the mizbeach. Nogech lo asaba onis karotzon. But that's not true regarding negicha. Meaning if an animal was a willing participant in murder, so then it's going to be unfit. But if it was an unwilling participant, so then it's going to be fit. Already right here, we could pause at this point of the Braisa, and this speaks to the idea of Rav, which is exactly why we brought down the Braisa. We're going to finish the Braisa, and then we're going to come back, and the Gemara is going to conclude its point. Nogech mishalem kofer, roveh and mishalem is a kofer. Now, a basic difference is that when you're a nogeach, when the animal gores the person to death, the owner of the animal, under certain circumstances, is going to have to pay kofer. Masha enkein, if the animal was roveya, so there's not going to be a kofer payment. Later, the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question, which is, why would there be a kofer payment? If the animal was involved in just bestiality, nobody died. So it's a very difficult point to understand. There's no kofer payment because simply there's no death. So what?
The
Gemara is going to ask the question later on. We'll get to the Gemara. Okay, and that's why it says Rabbi Shimon at the end of the Braisa, these points are not. Are not necessarily relatable one to another, and that's why the Torah has to give us both points. Okay, ad kan divrei habraisa ketanimias. The Gemara says the key line of the braisa for our purpose is the following: rovei asabo onis karatzon, negech lo asabo onis karatzon. So it says that in the braisa that when it comes to an animal murdering somebody, the Torah does not equate onis and ratzon. And now it only begs the following question: Lama ilchusa, lav lekarbon. So, isn't this exactly the point that Rav was trying to make? That if an animal murders somebody, kills somebody, but only does so because it was prompted to do so, it was forced to do so, the animal is still going to be able to be used on the mizbech. Isn't that exactly the point that Bryson was making? So the Gemara says, lo lekatala. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Maybe the only point that Bryson was trying to make is that this animal is not going to be put to death. But maybe the animal is not going to be fit on the mizbech. And hachinam imestabra, and the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what, if you think about it, this is really what the Braisa is trying to teach us. Only that the animal is not put to death if the animal was forced to kill somebody. De'i amar lekarbon, because if you think the discussion is revolving around the whether or not this animal is fit for carbon or not, nogech los abonis karatzon, lav onis di day kasov, velav ratzon di day kasov, lav ratzon di day kasov. So the Gemara says, because if we're talking about a carbon, I don't understand. Where in the Torah is there this discussion about an animal that killed against its will? Well, it is or it is not going to be fit for a carbon. Meaning, how can Rabbi Shimon make a point so clearly based on something that the Torah doesn't even address? The Torah does address whether or not the animal is going to be put to death. And we know that because we learned that back in the Mishnah. So the Torah does address that. So if Rabbi Shimon was making a point very clearly, using an argument, so fine. You want to make a point that the Torah explicitly states, that's fine. But if Rabbi Shimon wants to make a point which the Torah doesn't discuss, so how can you make an argument based on something that the Torah doesn't explicitly address? So the Gemara says, you're right. Absolutely right. The Braisa is only talking about whether or not the animal is going to be put to death. The Braisa does not speak to whether or not this animal is or is not fit for the Mizbeach, so we don't have a proof for Rav from the Braisa. Amamar. Nogech Mishalem is a kofer, Roveh and Mishalem is a kofer. Hechidami. So the Gemara says, now, another point that Rabbi Shimon says is, well, you know, if an animal murders, so the owner has to pay kofer under certain circumstances. If the animal was involved in bestiality, so the owner doesn't have to pay kofer. The Gemara says, I don't understand that point. If the animal was involved in bestiality, of course there's no kofar payment. Nobody died. Hechidami. Ilem de Rava v'katala, mali katala b'karna, mali katala b'rivia. And the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what. Let's say the animal committed bestiality, and through the act of bestiality, the person died. So the Gemara says, then I'll ask the question in the other direction. The owner of the animal for sure has to pay kofar. Meaning, what difference does it make how an animal kills a person? If the animal kills a person with a negicha, so then kofar. If the animal kills somebody through bestiality, okay, it's beyond tragic, but again, the same halacha, kofar. So ella de rava v'la katala. So the Gemara says, okay, so must be talking about a case where the animal was ravea, but there was no death. Well, if there was no death, hay de la mishalem kofar mishum de lo katalahu. The reason why you're not paying kofar is because there's no death. So am rabbi la olam de rava v'la katala de asula beidin v'katluhu. So the Gemara says, well. And Danny, this is what you were suggesting a little bit earlier. Maybe what happens is the following. The animal was involved in the act of bestiality. And now, what happens? You take the participants of the act, you bring them to Beis Din, the animal and the person, and you kill them both. So, it's interesting. The animal didn't directly kill somebody. But because the animal was involved in bestiality with this person, and because they were both taken to Beis Din, they were both killed. So now, can the family members of the victim now say, "Hey, your animal killed our family member, and therefore you have to pay us kofar"? That's what the Gemara now is contemplating. Mahu de tema kemandikat ladami, top of mem aleph amud aleph, and can we not now make the argument that? It's as if your animal killed our family member. So kamash malan. So that's the chiddush. The chiddush is that that is not going to be a valid argument in order for the family to collect kofar. In order for the family to collect kofar, it has to be a direct result of the animal. The death has to be a direct result of the animal.
Yeah, the human being that's doing this act is also involved. He's also going to get a very, but he knows what he's doing.
Agreed. Agreed. No disagreement. Meaning, so you're asking how the Gemara can even have the Havamina? Okay. Agreed. I don't know. It's a Havamina, but I don't know. Rava Amar La'olam de Rava Vikadla. So Rava says, no. We could talk about a scenario in which the animal was Rovea. The animal was committing an act of bestiality with a person. And kill the person. And previously we said, well, then he's going to have to, then the owner of the animal is going to have to pay kofar, right? The Gemara says, not necessarily. The Gemara says, v'tekakashalach malik atala b'karnai malik ala b'rivia, keren kavanaso lahazik. Hai kavanaso lahanas atzmo. Who? So the Gemara says, well, no. Maybe kofar not in this case. Because what the Gemara now is contemplating is the idea that the owner of the animal only pays kofar when the animal kills specifically with a keren. Why? We've discussed this since day one of the Masechta. What is the unusual nature of keren is that kavanas olahazik. The only reason why the animal drops its head down and gores you is because it wants to damage you. Not because it gets any benefit from it. It's not like eating. It's not like walking. Its only intent is to damage. And then the owner of the animal is going to have to pay kofar. But if the animal was rovea, so the animal is getting benefit. And even though in the course of the rivia, the person died, but the person died in a means in which the animal did it and got benefit, and maybe the Gemara is saying that's different. And the Gemara says, by my plea, and the Gemara says, and this takes us back to a discussion that we had once earlier in the Masechta. We saw it a couple of weeks ago in the Daf, and that is, Beregel Shadar Sagabi Tinuk Bechatzar Hanizak. La Bayim Mashalim Kofar, La Ravel Mashalim Kofar. So the Gemara says, let's say an animal, God forbid, tramples a person. The Gemara here describes it as a baby, but tramples a baby while walking, in the Rishus HaNizak. Now we know that Regal is only Chayv Rishus HaNizak. That's why we situate the animal here and the damage is in the Rishus HaNizak, because that's the only place where Regal is Chayv. And it kills somebody, but what makes this a question is that it didn't kill somebody through Karen, it killed somebody through Regal. So is there going to be a kofar payment? Rava says yes, and Rava says no, and Abaye says yes. And so now here as well, when an animal is roveya a person and kills a person through the revia, because it doesn't fall under the category of Karen, this falls under the category of, now, this part's indelicate and I'm not really sure what the right answer is. What category is this going to fall under? Shane? I guess Shane. But okay, so it's going to fall under the category of Shane. So it's not death through Karen, and according to Rava, that's why there's not going to be a kofar payment. And Tanya Kavase de Rav, and then finally, the Gemara goes back to the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Again, an animal that kills because it was trained to do so and compelled to do so. So it's not going to be put to death. That we knew already from the Mishnah. Can it be fit for a carbon on the Mizbeach? Rav said yes, Shmuel said no. The Gemara concludes the discussion by citing a brisa that sides with Rav. Tanya Kavase de Rav Shor Yitzad Nei Nechayiv Misa V'kash L'gabe Mizbeach Mimneshehu Kemi'usheh. The animal was forced and compelled to do it, and therefore it's as if the animal did so totally not on its own volition, and the animal's fit to be brought as a carbon. Let's continue. We are in the Mishnah Mem Aleph Amud Aleph. Shor Shenagach Es Adam Umeis. An animal kills a man. The man dies. Right? I'm sorry. Let me translate a little bit better so it comes out a little bit. The sentence makes a little more sense. An animal gores a man and the man dies. Mu'ad Mishlam Kofer. Tam Pater Min HaKofer. If the animal has done this previously, so then the owner of the animal pays kofar. Meaning, the Mishnah here is introducing us to the basic idea of kofar, which quite frankly is a pasuk in the Torah. So, even before the Mishnah we knew this already. But, tam patam and a kofar. But if the animal is a tam, so then you don't pay kofar. Now, if it bothers you, it should have bothered you, in other words, the moment you were introduced to this halacha, such a basic question. How can the animal ever get to this point in time? In other words, for the animal to have gored a fourth time, so that means, and I know this is not the most intelligent statement I'm making this morning, that it gored three times previously. But that of course means then that it should have been killed after the first goring. How come the animal's still alive? How do we even get to this point in time? The Gemara is going to ask that question. Yeah, the Gemara is going to give a half dozen answers, and Alan, that's one of the Gemara's answers. Very good. Okay, so the tam patam and a kofar, and tam is going to be exempt from having to pay the kofar payment. Zevzeh chayav misa. In both cases, the animal is put to death. V'chein beben, v'chein bebas. And it doesn't matter who the victim is. The victim could be a child, could be a boy, could be a girl. In other words, if the animal was involved in killing a person, regardless of age, the animal is put to death. Nagach eved o ama. Nosim shloshim salim bein shu yafe me'amane bein shena yafe ela dinar echad. If an animal kills an eved kanani or a shifcha kananis, so then the owner of the animal has to pay a kanas. This too is a pasuk in the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim. This too is not something that the Mishnah is teaching us, but the Mishnah is just simply explaining to us that this is a kanas, and it's irrespective of how much the eved kanani is actually worth. We start with the Gemara v'chimi achar the mitam katlin alei mu'ad hechim mishkachala. Here the Gemara asks the most basic question: how do we ever get to the point where the animal is a mu'ad? Gemara is going to be providing around six answers. I should have numbered them in the Gemara, but okay. Amar Rabba hachem amayis kinen gagon she'amdua l'shlosha b'nei adam. Well, the Gemara says, well, answer number one, that of Rabba. Well, you know what? The animal wasn't successful in killing three people, but it made an attempt to do so. So the animal was an attempted murderer three times. And that's why the animal is a mu'ad. So Amra as a Ravashi Amar Umdan Alav Klumu. So the Gemara says, okay, attempted murder is one thing, but in terms of establishing the animal to be a muad, that's not enough. In order for the animal to be a muad, it had to have been successful in killing three people previously. So Ravashi just simply rejects Rava's answer. So the Gemara's second answer is that it critically damaged three people. And as Rashi explains over here, why wasn't it killed? Because the people didn't die as of yet. Look at Rashi, seeking Gimel b'nei Adam. Rashi writes, "Lefichach lo niskal b'shnayim rishonim u'kishenagach shlishi meisukulam hilkach mishalam alav kofer." Now, by the way, Rashi over here is going to be a little bit difficult because Rashi keeps telling us that the kofer is coming on the third. Now, we already discussed earlier in the Masechta that in order for an animal to become a muad, it has to damage three and then go to the fourth. Okay, so admittedly, Rashi's a little bit difficult, but just an idea and explain the concept. Rashi says it critically damaged. Rashi says two, I'll say three, just to hopefully make this clear. But it critically damaged three people, and then the reason why the animal wasn't put to death is because the people didn't die yet. And then the people all died, now converting the animal into a muad. That's answer number two. Razvid amar kagon shaharik shlosha behemos. So the Gemara gives now a third answer. Well, the animal did kill, the victims were animals. The only time an animal is put to death is when it kills a human. The victims over here were animals, and that's why the animal is a muad, but it hasn't yet been put to death. So the Gemara says, okay, but muad la behema have muad la adam, but yes, the animal goes after other animals, and that does make it a muad la behema, but that doesn't make it a muad la adam. We've discussed already a number of times in the Masechta. We have mazel. Animals don't have mazel. Just because animals attack other animals does not necessarily mean it's going to attack us. In order for it to be a muad to kill people, we have to seen it historically kill three people. So the Gemara says, okay, it has killed, and it has killed three non-Jews. So the Gemara says, more lo avdi kochavim, who have a more Yisrael. So the Gemara says, okay, but categorically, two different categories. Yes, the animal now has shown a propensity to kill lo avdi kochavim, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to kill us. Okay, I'm not sure how to explain this, meaning we have a different mazel. Maybe that's a correct explanation. Slightly unclear about that point. But certainly, categorically, two different categories. And so, therefore, it's not muad. It's not muad to killing a Jew. Ela amar av shema melakish, kagon, sharik shlosh b'nei adam, treifa. So the Gemara says, yeah, it did go after three people, and it did kill three people. All three people happened to have been treifas. Meaning that they themselves were in terminal condition, and so therefore the animal itself is not going to be put to death. The halacha is that if an animal, for that matter, truth be told, if a person were to kill another person who is a treifa, so you are pater mimisa. You are not going to get the death sentence because you killed somebody who was in terminal care. It's still ritzicha, it's still murder, it's just that you're not going to be subject to the death penalty for doing so. So the Gemara says, "Amur l'treifa, amur l'shalem." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but still, that's not muad. In order for the animal to be registered as a muad, it has to have attacked not people who are in terminal condition." Again, I'm just suggesting that maybe the animal knew that the person was in such a weak and frail state, and that's why it went after the person. But in order for to establish that the animal is a muad, it has to go after three people, three separate people who are in good, healthy condition. Amar Papa Dekatav Arag La'agma, Dekatav Arag La'agma. So the Gemara gives another answer. This is where I lose count in terms of the number of answers. And part of the reason why I lose count is because some of the answers the Gemara likes, some of the answers the Gemara just flat out rejects. So the Gemara says, well, the animal killed and ran away. It killed and ran away. Basically, we never caught it. We know it did it, but we never got our hands on it in order to put it to death. Rav Achabre, Rav Ika Amar Kagon, Shehuzmu, Zomame, Zomamim. Gemara over here gives another answer, a complicated answer, in which what happened was is that witnesses testify that the animal has murdered. Then another pair of witnesses come and say, these first witnesses were lying. Imanu hayisim b'makom ploni. This happened the second time. This happened the third time. And now another pair of witnesses come and discredit the discrediting witnesses. And so now, by discrediting the discrediting witnesses, so now the original witnesses have all been reinstated, and so therefore the animal now has effectively killed three times. Okay. Now, Elia, admittedly, this last answer, right, improbable. I think I'm safe saying that. But just simply a way of at least constructing a scenario in which we can have an animal having gore three times and yet not being put to death. Eliyu de Torah be'inan shapir. So the Gemara says, now look, if the whole purpose of the Mu'ad warning is to establish that the animal has done so three times, so the Gemara says, fine. But Eliyah de Gavra be'inan mema amar leilo hava yedi'inan. So the Gemara says, but wait, we discussed this also about a week ago in the Daf. Perhaps the reason behind the Mu'ad is not to warn the animal, but to warn the owner. And the owner needs three separate warnings on three separate days. So the Gemara says, and if that's the purpose of Mu'ad, of the Ha'adah, so then we don't have that over here, because in this case, everything was discovered all on one day. So the Gemara says, "Could go into Amri called Amos de Katel Ture Gabe Havikai." So the Gemara says, "Well, maybe in this very unusual case, we are talking about where the witnesses not only came in and testified that the animal gored, but together in their testimony, they also said, and the owner was there as well, and he saw it there as well, and again." The case, a very unusual case where you have discrediting witnesses who said Imanu Ha'isim b'makom ploni, and then you have discreditors of the discrediting witnesses, but the point being that in the original testimony of all three sets of witnesses, they part of their testimony was, and the owner was there and he knew about it. Ravina Amar b'makirnas ba'al shor v'imakirnas ashor. So the Gemara says, well, another suggestion of the Gemara is that we know who the owner is, we just don't know who the ox is. So the Gemara says, we don't know who the ox is. Now, that part I totally understand. To differentiate between one ox and another, I mean, you have to be a farmer. From my untrained eye, it's impossible. So the Gemara says, my havel lema'eved. So the Gemara says, fine. But if you can't identify the ox, so then what are we even talking about? Mishum de'amrele tura nagancha islach bebekarcha ibayilach netrule kula bekarcha. So the Gemara says, well, basically what the owner of the cow, of the oxen was given was the following warning. Look, we know one of your ox amongst your oxen has gored and gored somebody to death. Now we don't know who it is, but now we are charging you with the obligation to guard all of your oxen, even that much more so. So at that point in time now, that's one, meaning that's considered one strike, even though we can't put the ox to death, but that's considered one, and then we go through that a second time, we go through that a third time, and then from that point going forward, seemingly, now this part I'm not sure about, but seemingly, if any of the oxen were to commit murder, so then the oxen, then there would be a kofar payment. Okay. We'll pause over here. Tomorrow we pick it up with the result of the animal being put to death, and a discussion that we had already once before in Shas. It's a good repeat discussion of Isuri Achila, Isuri Hana'a. Where do I learn it from? A classic discussion. Let's just quickly recap. We finished this morning the discussion of an animal going from the hands of the owner to a shower to a borrower, and the animal was a Mu'ad, the animal continues to be a Mu'ad. The shoal didn't know this information. He's not going to have to pay full damages, he's only have to pay half damages. The original owner is going to have to pay full damages. Questions we asked were questions like, can't the borrower make claims to the owner? Can the owner make claims to the borrower? And effectively, the Gemara went through the entire dialogue of what the two said to one another. When the animal goes back from the borrower into the hands of the owner, that's a reset button. Why is it that when it goes from the owner to the borrower, you don't hit the reset button, but when it goes from the borrower to the owner, you do hit the reset button? Gemara gave three answers to that question. The third answer, or Papa's answer, is that when it goes from the owner to the borrower, that's not a changing of ownership. when it goes from the bar back to the owner, that is considered change of ownership. And then we talked about the stadium shore, which is not going to be put to death because it was instructed to murder. It was forced, it was compelled to do so. It's not going to be put to death. Can it be used on the Mizbeach? Rav and Shmuel have a debate on this issue. Rav says yes, the halacha follows like Rav. It is fit to be brought onto the Mizbeach. And then we started the Mishnah, Mem Aleph Amud Aleph today, and the basic halacha regarding the regarding kofar, and we discussed today the Gemara's most basic question, how can it be that an animal is a muad for murder? In other words, they murder three times, and therefore on the fourth time, the owner has to pay kofar, and meanwhile, it should have been put to death after the first murder. The Gemara gave multiple answers to this question.